I can't hear me.
There I can hear me. And then there was Ed.
Good morning, everybody. My name's Ed Mutum, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
By the grace of God, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and sponsorship, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink or a mood-altering chemical since January 5th of 1971, and for that I'm extremely grateful. I don't say that to be braggadocious. If you notice, I gave all credit to God and the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of times when people introduce themselves that way, people say, well, that sounds a little, egotistical. Actually, it's quite humbling when you think about what we say, because that's the reason I'm here. If it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, if it wasn't for the 12 steps in my life, I don't know where I'd be, but it would be someplace that's not good. I'm going to be wandering around today. I got a wireless mic, so those of you who sat way in the back, I'm going to come sit on your lap. But I'm just going to wander around. Here's what I hope to do, especially this first hour, is talk about the 12 steps. And when I'm talking about the 12 steps this weekend, I'm going to ask you to suspend the whole thing about the alcohol. For step one, I want you to actually think about, I am powerless over my life situations, and my life has become unmanageable. Because you know what I found out? I found out that a lot of people get so hung up, and Bill wrote a wonderful article that is dispensed amongst you, Emotional Sobriety. He's addressing it, he calls it, to the oldsters in AA that pretty much got their drinking problem in hand. But it's the other areas of our life that are the problem. And you know, in the book, it talks about a way of life. It doesn't talk about just this one little area. And in the first step, when our life is unmanageable, notice it didn't say just your drinking life. It said our life's unmanageable. And I think a lot of us got into this and mistakenly thought it was just about our drinking or about our alcoholic and it's about everything in our life. So today, when we go through the 12 steps, I want you to keep that in mind, that I'm talking about every area of our life. I said it last night, and I'll remind you again this morning, that whatever area of your life you're not applying these steps in, that's the one that's going to be your next program if you're not real careful. Because I don't know about you, but I can become addicted to anything. Anything. If I'm not working these steps. On your tables, you got these little candies. And in the Lord's Prayer, we say, lead us not into temptation. They obviously don't listen to that prayer. Because these will kill me. It's kind of like these and peanut brittle. I mean, I've been around a while. I've tried to work these steps the best I can, but peanut brittle has a magic power over me like these candies can. 3 years ago, I bought 5 pounds of peanut brittle for the holiday season. 3 days later, with sore jaws, I was looking for more peanut brittle. So I've had to work my steps where peanut brittle and candies were concerned. And I'm joking about it, but you know what? It's true. It's absolutely true that if I don't discipline myself, and I'm going to talk about that today, the mental, physical, and spiritual discipline that's required, in my understanding, to advance towards serenity and peace. I guess the problem is today, there's a lot of people that don't want any part of serenity and peace. We love the chaos. We're addicted to it. We're addicted to talking about our problems and how they affect us. So when I say I am powerless over situations, I mean whatever situation we're talking about. I was a chaplain in a factory for a few years, and I started a generic 12-step meeting there, because I couldn't start one for every 12-step group there is. Because of that conversation that took place here in 1935, there are over 236 registered 12-step groups. 236. So when I'm talking about it'll work for anything you apply it, I think that verifies the truth, that it will. But I'm a chaplain at this place, and we're sitting there, and I had this 12-step meeting, and everybody come in and start griping about work. That happened once. And I stopped and I said, that ain't what we're here for. We're here to talk about how these steps can work in our upsets at work. We're here to apply the program here at work, and they were all shocked. How many of us would be shocked at that statement? How many of us would be delighted for our coworkers to know that we're supposed to be on a spiritual journey of the 12 steps? You know? How many of us would be delighted for our coworkers to know that we sit in meetings and talk about how happy we are and how good life is? Of course, we can do that in homes too. I was one of those alcoholics that for a long time I'd come to meetings and I'd be excellent for an hour and then I'd go home and be the same jerk I always was. I always love it when a new person comes up to me with their spouse. And they say, oh, life's wonderful. I just take a glance at the spouse, and it pretty much gives you an indication of how life is, I'll tell you. And then not that it's always right, but what I had a tendency to do and what I found out a lot of people had a tendency to do is come here for an hour and simulate recovery.
Live and let live, day at a time. How are you? Good to see you. Yeah.
And go home and kick the dog and be the same jerk I'd always been. At work, on the road, on the highway, yeah, there are no exceptions. There are no exceptions because you are an example, good or bad, whatever you're doing and wherever you're at, of the program you say you belong to. And I believe that that's our greatest responsibility today, is to be an example, the best example you can be, of whatever you're saying you're representing. I was having a conversation with a guy I sponsor about 3 years ago on this, and I said, it is your responsibility to behave yourself no matter where you are, because you might be the only example of AA anybody ever sees. And I mean that. And we're talking about that at length, and we're talking for about a half hour, and we'd put our order in, and the waitress came over and said, I'm sorry, I forgot to put in your order. And I laughed. I said, that's funny. She said, you're not mad. I said, oh, I screw up all the time. How can I be mad? And she sent the owner over to make sure I wasn't nuts and offered me a free dessert, you know, and I certainly wasn't going to argue with a freebie, so I thank you very much. And we continued our conversation about being an example. We got about halfway through our dinner when it got there, and we were in a place with these real high booths where you can't see people on the other side. And this couple got up and came around, and they said, are you Ed M. that talks in AA? And I said, yeah. And he said, I've heard your CDs and you've helped my life tremendously. And his wife, teary-eyed, said, you really have. Thank you for what you do. And they walked out the door. I'm sorry to tell you, 10, 15 years sober, I would have destroyed whatever goodness that CD had put in their life by the way I would have reacted when that waitress come, you forgot to put in my order? What an excellent example. I'm sure the guy still thinks I paid somebody off to do that, you know, because we're having this conversation, but it just hit me. The gift we've been given, how do you treasure it? Do you even think it's a gift? You know, a lot of people today in these steps think it's a social situation. That, well, yeah, you got to kind of pay attention to that, but I've got to be more self-analytical than anything else. Not to my understanding, not to my reading. And I really believe that we've been given something, and I'll say it one more time, that'll solve any problem we have. On page 44 is one of my favorite parts in the book. And I always go back and read my favorite part in the book because I don't know about you, but over the years, people have come in and rewritten many paragraphs. Sure wasn't the way I remember it, I'll tell you. That's why when I quote, I always try to go back and make sure the quote is accurate, because I don't want to give you yesterday's reality. I want to give you today's. And it says on page 45, excuse me. Well, let's do 44. Start at the bottom. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. our human resources, as marshaled by will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Lack of power was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live. It had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how do we find this power? And this is the part where I read to people who say, I don't get the spiritual part of this program. It says, well, that's exactly, notice the word, exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself that will solve your problem. That means we've written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. And it means, of course, that we are going to talk about God. And I promise you, today we're going to talk about God. And if that offends anybody, pray for me. Because I'm not talking about the God I believe in. I'm talking about the God you should be believing in. What should you be believing in? Whatever you can believe in. Because the greatest thing about the 12 steps is it says start where you can start. You don't have to start anywhere but what you believe in. I don't know about you, but that was great news to me. That was great news to me. I am powerless over my life. It has become unmanageable. I did that drunk. I've done it sober. How many have been in the program a little while and then one day found that you've made errors and mistakes that just brought you to your knees? One more time. Yeah, me too. And you know what? There isn't anything bad enough that these steps won't walk you through. The only time they don't walk me through them is when I don't apply them. It's an odd thing. The only time they don't work is when I don't apply them. Anytime I take the time to work them, they work wonderfully every single time. That's why when I get up in the morning, the first thing I do is I thank God that I opened my eyes. I know a lot of people can't do that. I sit up on the bed, I thank God for that. I know a lot of people can't do that. You know? I get up and walk around the room. I thank God for that. I know a lot of people can't do that. You see, I can't appreciate my life until I acknowledge the good things I've had, and that's tough for me. Like I told you last night, for those of you who were here, I was one of those guys that could walk into a room of 300 people, 299 could say, Ed, you're the best, and one could go, what a jerk. And guess who I remembered? And I'll promise you there's one collector's here today. I promise you there's one collector's here. I did a retreat a while back, and this woman came up to me and said, you know, the first day you talked, you said, and I said, and that's been on your mind all weekend. Yeah. I said, what else did you get? Well, not a lot. And I just laughed, said, well, I understand that. And she misunderstood what I said going in, you know. But I understand being a collector of ones. I understand that, and one of the things I'm going to ask you to do, and I'm going to ask you to do it right now, is we're just going to take a minute, and we're going to ask the God of our understanding into this room. And if you don't have a God of your understanding, I want the people that do have a God of their understanding to bless the people who don't have a God of their understanding. Let's just take a minute and do that. Thank you. One of the things I realized about step one, man, time flies when you're having fun. One of the things I understood about step one is there isn't anything I'm really not powerless over. Oh, my ego may tell me this, that, and the other thing, but bottom line is, I'm powerless over everything. And once I acknowledge that, I have strength that I never knew. I have strength that I never knew, not in just one area of my life, in my ism, but in real life, everyday life, on the freeway, speaking of step two, I'd be in those meetings and I'd be talking about God and I'd be out on those highways giving people the one finger salute and telling them what they could do with their car. Because there's one thing about them. If I'm in front of them, they're driving too fast, and if I'm in back of them, they're driving too slow. That's the deal. And a constant agitation. You know what? That agitation isn't their problem. That's mine. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. A lot of people don't want to hear that crap. Long time sober, they don't want to hear that crap because they may have to give up some of their insanities. They're the half measures folks that sit in meetings and take up chairs and gripe about the reality of today simply because they don't want to work the steps. I've been there. I'm not pointing fingers. I've been there. About anything I'm going to share with you about something you can do wrong, I've been there. So I'm not taking shots at anybody. But the first part of that, you know, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves. I am so glad they used the term power greater than themselves, because when I came into the program, if you would have said God, I would have been gone. Some of you heard my talk last night and know that I'm a minister now. And down south, my name's Reverend Ed. I like going down south because they're the only people I know that could stretch my name into a two-syllable word. Ed. But it is part of their belief that they have to refer to me as Reverend Ed or Pastor Ed. It's just their belief. And I learned a long time ago that trying to change that for them, because that's their belief system, is not for me to do. They always ask, how do you want to be listed? And I said, Ed M's fine, you know. Ed M's fine. I go down there and it's Reverend Ed. And you know the reason I don't like that? It's because if I came to that conference and Reverend Ed was on there, I wouldn't walk into the room. Who needs to hear that crap? You know? Who wants to be a sunbeam for Jesus? You know? Who needs that? Yeah, you know? Jeez. What a loser. Couldn't make it in the church, so now he's talking in a captured crowd. A&A, you know? That's how I would feel. I just would. But I give them the right to do whatever they want. But power greater than myself was so important to me. I believe in the 12 and 12s. It talks about even having the group as your higher power. Now, I've heard people say, you can't do that. I'm going to tell you something, what I believe. I've heard people say, I got a doorknob for a higher power. I got a tree for a higher power. And I've heard people go, isn't that ridiculous? And I said, no. If that's their belief, excellent. Because at least they're being honest about what they believe. How about you? How about you? We have been taught so long certain things and thought we had to believe certain things that we talk stuff that we don't even believe. So when they talk about power greater than yourself, it really helped me to get down to the nitty-gritty of what is that. And again, once again, I found going through the steps that it was pretty much everything was a power greater than myself. I remember my sponsor one time. I said, you know, I can't really conceive of a power greater than myself. I just can't do that. He said, really? And I said, yeah, that's true. He said, well, Ed, you go out under that street light and take off all your clothes. In about 20 minutes, a power greater than yourself will come up in a black and white car and take you away. Well, he had me there, you know. And as I looked at it, you know what? Everything was a power greater than yourself. God forbid you don't like me. Is a power greater than myself. Now, I at that time was a street punk, street fighter, motorcycle gang hippie, which wasn't easy to be. And I'm walking around with my look. I had my look everywhere. And if you didn't like me, I was sad. But you couldn't tell out here. I remember walking into a meeting one time, I had my look. Old Logan, we buried him with 52 years. I walked in and had my look on. I didn't even know I had my look on. Had my look. Logan said, how you feeling, Ed? And I said, fine. And he said, you better tell your face. It has no idea. You know? Yeah. Amen and amen, huh? Power greater than myself, I had to find something that was greater than me. And you know what? John, big John that made 12-step calls on me before I wanted him to. I always say when you took me to AA, I never stayed sober. When I came to AA, I never left. But thank God they took me, they sent me, they told me to come here, and it never took. And big John was one of those guys that would just loved me. He was always there. Made early 12-step calls on me. And the kind of AA I'm from, in Davenport, Iowa, right now, if you go to Central Discussion on Tuesday or Thursday nights, there's 5 to 6 guys sitting in there that were in that meeting that I got sober in 37 years ago. And the meeting back then was 18 or 19. 37 years later, there's 5 or 6 still sitting, depending on what they're doing, still sitting there sober. And there's another 5 or 6 that died sober. It isn't a matter of whether these steps work. It's a matter of whether we'll work the steps at depth. So these guys, Big John was a power greater than myself. I know it's hard for you to believe, but he'd been sober a whole year in a row. That impressed me. Those guys that said, 5, 10, 50, well, they were just lying. That's all that was. They're lying. They couldn't have been drinking like I've been drinking, or they wouldn't have made it. So a power greater than myself was Big John, who'd pick me up and give me a ride to meetings. Power greater than myself was Bobby. I wouldn't ask anybody to give me a ride to a meeting because I didn't feel worthy of it. So I'd walk 5, 6 miles from Davenport, Iowa to Bettendorf, Iowa, Long River Drive there on Thursday night to go to a meeting. And Bobby would ask me every Thursday, he said, Ed, you need a ride home? I said, oh, no, thanks. He said, come on, let me give you a ride home. I said, no, I don't need one. He said, oh, come on. I said, okay, like I'm helping him. And he'd give me a ride home, and he did that every Thursday. You know what I found out 2 years later? That when Bobby dropped me off, he'd go about a block, and the police would pull him over and surround his car, pull out all the seats and ask what he was doing with me. You know what Bobby did? Next Thursday, he said, Ed, you need a ride. I said, no. He said, come on, Ed, let me give you. No. And I'd help you. Never said a word. Bobby was a power greater than myself. Power greater than myself is whatever you conceive it to be. You know, the most important thing is start where you're planted. Start where you're planted. If you don't believe a lot of stuff, that doesn't matter. Throw that stuff out. No need for an argument. The question is, what can you believe? What can you believe? What can you really believe? It's up to you. It's not what I believe. It's what can you believe? And that's tough because we've been taught what we believe and told what we should believe and all that's... And you know what? All of that's not necessary anymore because you just got to believe in something greater than you. So if it's the doorknob and you believe it, I love you, man. If it's the tree and you believe it, excellent. If it's Jesus Christ and you believe it, excellent. You know, it's funny, they always say, you can have any higher power you want in AA. You can have a tree, you can have a doorknob, you can have, just don't mention Jesus, thank you very much. But we don't judge, mind you, we don't judge. Really. But, you know, if Buddha, whatever it is, see, what I love about the 12 steps is we welcome everybody, truly, we welcome everybody. It's not the great debating society here because it's a God of your understanding, it's not a God of my understanding. The power greater than yourself could restore me to sanity. Now, there's an inference in that statement that I might be crazy. I told you last night I was locked up in state mental institutions and still had a problem with step two. I had it certified and documented that I had problems. That's when they told me that I could never live in any free society without some sort of medication to sedate my emotions. And you know what? For the way I was acting and living at that time, they were exactly right. And when I came to you, you made it possible for me not to do any of that today. Restore me to sanity. What does that mean? And does it just mean in the drinking, or does it mean in our every area of our life? Our home. Our home. You want to hear insanity? Parents screaming at each other before their children. That's what I learned. Get your point across, be louder. And I always said, you know what, when I get married, I'm never going to do that. Guess what I caught myself doing? And when I caught myself doing it, I told my children, I said, you know what, new rule in my house, nobody screams. Nobody. In the last 20 years, it's been violated once, and that was by me. And I apologized and made amends immediately. See, insanity really means acting crazy, doing things that's going to defeat the purpose in which we hope to achieve. Like we think we'll get peace if we scream louder. You know? I think I'll get peace if I intimidate you and threaten to kill you. No, what I get is usually a siren and a knock on my door. Insanity is hanging on to anger for years and years and years. Years and years and years. I was in Longview, Texas, and I gave my talk, and a woman come up to me and said, I want to talk to you. I said, okay. And she said, I've hated my father for 56 years, and he's been dead for 20. And I said, why? But I knew why. I know the tone. I know the attitude. I know the tone. Said, he molested me. And I said, whoa. I said, why have you kept the molestation alive for the last 20 years? What's your payoff for that? He's dead. Why are you still keeping it alive? And she was a bit taken back. And she said, I'd never thought of it that way. I said, well, let's think about it that way for a while. What good purpose in your life does it serve for you to hang on to that? Then she asked me one of the best questions I ever been asked. She said, what if I die and go to heaven and he's there? Isn't that a great question? Wow, what a question. And God gave me an answer like that. I said, man, what better place to run into him? Because if he's in heaven, he's understand the wrong he's done. And he's asked for forgiveness. And he's there to make things right. And she said to me, for the first time in 56 years, I'm walking away a free woman. She made a conscious decision to stop the insanity right there. Her pain was self-inflicted. The world wasn't doing it. Her father wasn't doing it. He'd been gone years and years and years. The insanity is to keep doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. It's not just due to our drinking, it's due to our thinking. Step two demands that we challenge everything we've ever thought, in my opinion, and ask, is it sane? Now, I had no barometer to go by because I'd been goofy since I was a kid. And so I thought, sanity, how can I get an example? Where's my benchmark there? And I remember, I'm the youngest of seven children. I'm the baby. And should see my big brothers and sisters. But I was not planned for in life. I came along unexpectedly. Well, they knew what they were doing. I don't know how it was unexpected. Anyway, I was born, and my older sisters just loved me and would take me on all their dates with them. I'll bet you there's guys in Durant, Iowa, still hating this kid, you know? And I thought of that because they said, Ed, you were always a light. You were always a joy. You just had a way about you that was calming, and you could make a smile, and we just loved being with you. And I thought, maybe that's sanity. So at least I got a little benchmark now. And the more I read this book, when they talk about happy, joyous, and free, and those promises, I think I'm on the right track. Because sanity is doing in life what brings me peace. And what brings me peace is not trying to control everybody and everything around me. I don't know about you, but I used to tell you I wasn't afraid of anything, and the reality was I was terrified of everything. I was terrified of everything. And talk about insanity. You know, I mentioned it before, the way you'd look at me could throw me into a tizzy. So restore me to sanity. A lot of times we think, well, just where our drinking's concerned. No, you know what? It was your thinking that got it, ended up in the drinking. It says in our big book that alcohol is but a symptom. And sometimes we think once we got the symptom taken care of, we're done. If you believe that, see you when you come back next time, and the next time, and the next time. I'm sponsoring a guy who used to say, he no longer says, I've been slipping in AA for 26 years. And he came to our meeting and he said that and went on. And then afterwards he said,
I've heard a lot about you. You don't take a lot of crap, do you?
I said, well, I don't know about that. I just try to be straightforward. He said, I'd like you to sponsor me. I said, oh, I don't think you do. And he said, why? I said, your biggest ego factor we're going to get rid of right now. You no longer sit in meetings and tell people you've slipped for 26 years. Because you've leaped. You know, there wasn't no slip at all. Had you been working this program, you would have been sober. It's that simple. And I said, I don't know why you find it necessary to keep putting yourself down because you haven't done well. You know, we're supposed to be living today. You know when today is? Right now. Present moment of now. If we're anywhere else, if we are anywhere else, we're outside of God's help. Anywhere else, we're outside of God's help. And so now he introduces himself and he tells how long he's been sober. One day at a time. And that's all he says. And I say, I told him, you know, if there's an incident comes up where somebody's been doing what you did, pull them aside afterward and talk to them. Share your experience, strength, and hope. And help them to stay. But he couldn't figure out why he kept slipping. And the reason he kept slipping is he didn't change the basic approach he started with when he came into AA. And I've seen it in Al-Anons, too. I've seen it in every 12-step program I've ever worked with. The minute we stop working this program, the insanity returns. And if we have never attempted to work this program in areas of our life, it just increases. That's why some people come up to me, you know, after I came to the program, I got crazier. Yeah, reality set in. And you go through some tough times adjusting to life on life's terms and surrendering. And this is something we'll probably talk a lot about. We don't like talking about it, but we really need to talk about it here. This is where it asked me to surrender to a power greater than myself. And I always thought, man, I don't surrender. I was sponsoring a mixed martial arts guy, a UFC fighter. And we were talking about surrender. And do you know what UFC is, the mixed martial arts and the octagon and that? And I said, okay, they got you down and they got you in a choke. You're going to tap out? Oh, no, they got you in an arm bar, which can literally break your arm. And they got you in it and they got you bad. You're going to tap out? And he said, I will never tap out. And I said, so you'll risk the possibility of never winning another fight? And he went, oh, I never thought of it that way. There's times when we just need to surrender. And for me, that's every morning when I get up. What do I surrender? Everything. Especially if it's important to me. If it's overly important, I surrender it quickly. Akron, I love Akron. Smitty and I, Dr. Bob's son, became good friends the last 5-6 years he was alive. And in fact, I was honored to do his funeral when he passed away. And after the funeral was over, his grandson, Bob's son, Todd, came up to me and gave me a box and said, we'd like you to have this. And I said, what is it? And they said, it's Dr. Bob's favorite picture of Christ that always hung above the mantle in the front room. God, I was touched. And I took it home and I put it up on my wall. And newcomers, I'm one of those guys that believe you should do your fourth and fifth step with your sponsor, but I understand a lot of people don't, so I listen to a lot of fourth and fifth steps. And I set a newcomer down right under that picture, and they'd be really nervous and really, and I'd tell them the story of who that picture belonged to, and peace had just come over them. We had a wonderful fifth step. And I had it some time, and then all of a sudden, I heard myself say, you know what I got? I got Bob, Dr. Bob's favorite picture of Christ at my house. I went home and I called a dear friend of mine and I gave it away immediately. Because that was not the intent it was given to me. It was given to me out of gratitude and humility. and I will not disgrace it. You know, I will not get into that insanity, because it isn't all about me. There's step two. If it's still all about you, you've missed it all. You've missed it all. It isn't all about you. It's all about surrendering to a new way of life. Step three, made the decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood Him. Very important words there. But I'm going to ask you, what is the God of your understanding? Now, being a pastor, all the time I have people say, oh, I've loved Jesus since I was a child. And I've always loved Jesus and followed Jesus. And I'd say, then why are you in prison? They're lying and don't even know it. Now, they don't mean to be lying. Gosh, they want to. But the reality is they don't. My little church, the requirement is don't profess any faith you don't have, because it kills you. It kills you. How dare you profess a faith in something you don't have? It destroys life. It kills people. And it runs people out of AA. And Al-Anon, and all the other 12-step programs. What's important is the God of my understanding, and you've all got some paper there. I want you to take a minute with a piece of paper and a pencil, and I want you to write down something about a God, a higher power, a God of your understanding that you can really believe in. That if I had a lie detector hooked to you, and you were hanging over a cliff, 3,000-foot drop, and if you lied, it would release. That's what I want you to put in, because it's that important. Your life, to my understanding, depends on this decision. So write down a thing or two that you can actually believe in. And there's no right amount to write down. There's no wrong amount to write down. Anybody that just came in new, if we got a piece of paper and pencil on your table, we're talking about step three. And I just want you to write down something about a God that you can really believe in. Not that sounds good. Not that you've been told you believe. Are you going to go to hell? What do you believe? What can you believe? It can be one word. Make sure you believe it. For many of you, it'll be the first honest inventory you've ever taken about a power greater than yourself or God as you understand them. I run into people all the time that keep professing old stuff and they keep sliding downhill and they can't figure out why. Now, when you start here, you may end up to where you wanted to be or where you never thought you'd be. But at least it's the God of your understanding. Personal. Remember what I read on page 44, 45? The exact nature of this, the purpose of this book is to find a power that will solve your problem. A personal relationship with a power that will solve your problem. That's what we're talking about, no more and no less. I was just with a group of people who kept saying, well, step three was just my permission to go on with the steps. Well, I got a little flash for them. Not what it says here. In fact, I'll read something to you that I just love. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Guess what is the root of our troubles after we get to these programs? Selfishness, self-centeredness. Now, a lot of people in Al-Anon say, oh, I was never selfish. Well, control selfish. And it's self-centered. Sorry. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, and self-seeking and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but invariably we find at some point in the past we made decisions based on self, which later put us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. True, drunk, or sober. That's why when we're starting to talk about a power greater than yourself, that's why a power greater than yourself is needed to get us out of that situation. And this is where I hear people, some of the things, I told you I'd get into it. Oh, this is a selfish program. Show me one spot where it says that. Show me one spot anywhere in any AA literature. And I talk a lot about AA because that's the basis of the 12 steps. I know there are many variations on the steps. I've read a lot of different books, the NA book, the CA book. There's a lot of different variations, but this is the root. The 12 steps in the big book are the root. And that's why it's so important to me that you always go to the root, not somebody's new interpretation, not somebody with a new look. These 12 steps were the first program in the history of humankind that helped people like me on a consistent basis. And do you know what I've seen in the last 25 years? People insisting that it isn't sufficient. And you know what I've seen for the last 25 years? Membership plummet. For the last 5 years, the membership in AA is flatlined. It's never happened before in our history. And my personal opinion is because they don't understand the steps. They don't understand the program. Somehow they got to thinking that this was a social event rather than a commitment to a way of life. And that commitment to the way of life holds my step two and my step three. That's why when we're talking about made the decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood Him, can you tell me what more there is than will and life? So the obvious question is, what isn't that you haven't turned over? Who isn't that you haven't turned over? You know? People have said from time to time, Ed, you've turned into a big book thumper. I said, I'd rather be thumping on the big book than thumping on you. And believe me, you would too. But why wouldn't I talk about the 12 steps that took me from total insanity to a place where people actually call me and ask my advice and ask my presence with them? Why wouldn't I? My will in my life. When was the last time you asked yourself, well, what's God want for me? Instead of doing the God do list, this, God do that. Well, God, if you do this, I'd like you. And if you do this, I'll believe in you. And if you do this. I had a terrible time, as I told you last night, with this God of my understanding because I was so preoccupied with my negative images of the churches I'd been exposed to. Now, I need to tell you, that isn't even a fair statement anymore because it wasn't the churches I was exposed to, it's what I chose to remember that some of the people said in the churches I was around. Had nothing to do with church. Had to do with who I chose to listen to and why, and usually it was to make them find fault. Find fault with them some way. You know? See there, they're not perfect. Another thing that makes me crazy in AA and Al-Anon a lot. Well, I'm not going to be perfect. Surprise! The arrogance that you even thought you were going to be. This program is not about being perfect. It's about walking toward perfection. These steps are designed to help us get better. Not perfect. Not perfect. Some of us tend to think that you can taste that from time to time through these steps. But it isn't everlasting. Because I'll tell you one thing I know. You won't stay sober on the third step you worked yesterday. Just like you won't stay sober on the person, people you tried to help yesterday or whatever position you had yesterday. You'll get sober by the third step you're working right now. So when you think about and when you pray and when you ask a God of your understanding. I want you to take your paper and remember that and bring that image to mind when you pray. Actually bring that picture to mind when you pray. I talk to a lot of people and they come up to me and they say, you know, Ed, I'm just not experiencing a good relationship with God. And I'd say, well, what exercise are you doing to do that? And they went, huh? And I said, if you wanted to get in shape, would you go stand outside the gym? I don't get it. I'm not in any better shape. In order to get in good spiritual fit condition, you need to be doing the exercises. Third step is the first, and step two is the first, and step three is another step in the most important exercise, in my opinion, that you can do, and that's build a relationship with a God of your understanding that's with you everywhere, at all times, no matter what's going on. A lot of people tend to believe in God right until something comes up that they don't like, until something comes up that upsets the apple cart. And then they say things like, God's testing me. I love it when they say that in meetings, and I told you last night, I say, yeah, that's right, God stops the whole world just to goof around with your day. You know? I just have difficulty with that. Sounds a bit arrogant to me, you know. God never tests me. Life tests me all the time. But the God that I know and love, one thing he doesn't do is play little psychological games. When my father was murdered, we were at the murder trial, or excuse me, at the funeral, and that priest said, a lot of people would say Clifford's death is God's will, and he said, I don't believe that. I believe God created all of us and gave us a free will, and some of those people chose to do this act, and now it's God's will. It was the first time I could quit blaming God for every rotten thing that ever happened in my life. People come up to me all the time and say, you know, they always say, God doesn't give you too big a load. I don't know if he's paying attention to me. I said, or you're trying to lift too much. One of the two. One of the two. It's that surrender thing again. Why is it the harder it is or the more traumatic it is that we clamp on rather than let go? Why do we do that? We're supposed to surrender our will and our life. That means this, not this, or not this. Let me think about this. Some days you might as well take the gun with you, if you're like me. And God removed that from me too, because I surrendered the insanities. I surrendered the option of even committing suicide sober. I surrendered the option of even being crazy. We'll talk about 6 and 7 in a little while, but that was a big thing for me. You know, if you act crazy, nobody will ask you to do a thing. Kind of like that idea, you know? Here comes crazy Ed. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Only trouble was, I wasn't getting better in the inside. And this is a program, it's odd, because this is just my perception, but it's kind of like, we come to AA, and it works from the outside in. And then we come to a point in life, usually it seems about 6, 7 years sober, at least that was my experience, and a number of people I've worked with have that, and there comes a point where it seems like this is all dull and this is all isn't happening anymore. And that's the point where we start working it from the inside out. You've got the basic ingredients. You know the third step. It's time to apply it, not talk about it in meetings. When I got Clancy as a sponsor, one of the things he said is, I don't want you going to any discussion meetings. I said, why? He said, first half of the meeting, you're going to be thinking about what you're going to say. Then you're going to talk and you're going to spend the rest of the meeting thinking about what you should have said. I thought, how do you know? So for a good 10, 12 years, I didn't go to a discussion meeting. I just went to speaker meetings in Southern California. There's speaker meetings everywhere all the time. And there's little participation before the speaker. But 10, 12 years, I didn't. And the most incredible thing happened. I learned how to listen. I didn't have to judge your talk anymore. I could take what was applicable to me and understandable to me, and sometimes challenging, because if it really challenges me, that's what I want to take, because I don't want to be dormant anymore. I remember I told Clancy, I said, you know, I was 10, 15 years sober. I said, I'm going to discussion meetings. Anna. He said, well, I would hope you wouldn't. I said, well, no, I was 2.5 years sober. You told me not to. He said, Ed, that was 12 years ago.
Oh, okay. I do good.
But for me, it was God's grace. When we're talking about step three, we're talking about building something. The first three are the foundation for anything you hope to achieve. And here's the greatest thing I love about the 12 steps. You can always start fresh. There is no, oh, I didn't do that, or I didn't do that. Then do it. Get off the I shoulda stuff. I shoulda done this and I shoulda done that. No, you get to. I get to do this and I get to do that. Because you can always start fresh. You don't have to go out. People that, oh boy, want to get me annoyed? I needed that last slip. No, you need this right in your nose. Because there's some newcomer that's listening to that crap and will use it as an excuse. What I was told is you can stay sober under any circumstances if you just stay here and try to believe. That has been my experience. And since all this stuff has come up about, oh, you can do this and you can do that, God, hardly anybody's sober anymore. In the big book, it talks about 50% of those who came and give it an honest try stayed sober, and eventually up to 75%. My guesstimation now in AA getting sober, 3%. People go, oh, that's too low. Really? Were you in treatment? How many of your class is still sober? Do a little math. It's right where we're at. One of the reasons we're at that is because I believe we've forgotten the essence of the 12 steps. That's why I take weekends and I come and do this. It's that important for me to carry on the conversation. It's that important for me to remember that I've been given these steps and these programs, which has miracle properties, only if I participate. And I can't just do it intellectually. The third step is not an intellectual decision. It's a mental, physical, and spiritual commitment, one day at a time, to walk that way. And you can sit there and talk about step three all day long. But what happens when it's time to apply it? I shared with you last night my experience that I started out on step two and power greater than myself, and then I wrote down my characteristics in the God I could believe in was he was kind and loving and understanding. And I started out there, and it was wonderful. But then I made a mistake. I started parroting what I heard other people say. And I ended up lost. And then a little over a year sober, I'm in the morgue looking at my father's body with a bullet hole in his face. And I reach for that faith I'd been professing and come up with a handful of nothing. Handful of nothing. Handful of nothing. There was ever a time I needed a faith. But you see, God did for me what I could not do for myself. I opened that door and there were members of AA and Al-Anon right there. They did for me what I could not do for myself. And I learned my lesson then. When it comes to step three, I've got to be honest for my own well-being. Not to impress anybody, not to do anything other than maybe for the first time in my life, make an honest commitment. And if that honest commitment is, I don't know if I can buy that at all, excellent. Start there. Because if you start anywhere else, you're lying. And rigorous honesty, not just honesty, but rigorous honesty, is what we have to have if we're going to stay, find serenity, if we're going to stay sober, if we're going to find any peace. And I'm one of those that I hear people say, well, if I felt that bad, I'd drink. No, I don't buy that no matter what. I don't drink no matter what by God's grace. And I think that when I stay sober through those difficult times, I remember I was in my early 20s sober. 22, 23 years sober, and I was engaged to this terrific gal, and we'd gone together 5 years, and all of a sudden, I won't go into all of it, but she left. She left after I said, you know, I want to ask you to marry me, but before I do, she's a member of Al-Anon. I said, before I do, I want you to go home, and I want you to think of any scenario you can think of why you wouldn't want to stay married to me. And if you come up with one, say no. I won't bother you for 30 days. 31 days, I called up, and she said, I can't think of anything that would ever drive me away from you. And I thought, oh, thank you. And I guess there was one thing. The IRS. Got a little bill for $52,000. Made her a little nervous, for good reason. And that, with a series of other things, she departed. Since I've been sober, buried one of my brothers that came to AA 6 months after I did, buried him at 36, drunk driving, after 3 years sobriety, and decided he could drink again. Had another brother killed by a drunk driver. My father was murdered. Cousin was murdered. Been divorced. Lost everything 2 or 3 times. This relationship breaking up put me on my knees sobbing for days. And I went to well-meaning people. I even went to her psychologist. Nothing against psychologists. They're very helpful. But I went to that psychologist, and I said, you know, I can't get through a day without breaking down in tears. And he said, well, let me give you a little something to ease you through this. And I said, oh, no thanks. And he said to me, oh, don't give me that AA martyrdom. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, oh, you people in AA. And I said, let me ask you this, Doc. If you put me on that, can you guarantee I'll ever get off? He said, well, I can't make guarantees like that. And I said, why would you even offer it to me then? You don't understand. I'd love something like that. But this program either works or it doesn't. Took me 3 years to get through an entire day without tears. And people come up to me and say, I thought you had a better program than that. And I say to them, I had an excellent program. Because I never thought I'd make it. But I live one day at a time. And regardless of what we've been through in life, there are always new surprises. There are always new things that are going to come up in life. That's why we, in my opinion, we've always got to revisit these steps and look at our commitment to them and our practice of them. And you can get spiritually fit. And the biggest problem I see with people in 12-step programs is this. As soon as they start feeling better, they stop doing the very things that made them feel better. And they end up in the doldrums again, feeling bad and depressed and can't figure out why. Well, are you praying? Oh, no, no, no. You going to meetings? Well, I'll cut back a little bit. You sponsoring people? No, no. And then I'll get those people who'll be doing all that outside stuff. Be going to meetings and sponsoring people and have this position and that position and ready to put a gun in their mouth. And I'll say, how you doing on the spiritual reality of the 12 steps? He said, well, I haven't paid much attention to that. And I said, and you're ready to blow your brains up. Might be a sign. Just might be a sign. Been there. I understand it. I've been there where I've been driving down the highway after talking at an AA meeting and pass by a bridge abutment and say, you know, it'd be a lot easier to turn into that abutment. And I'm sober. And the insurance would pay off, the kids would be better off, and I'd be fine. I'm not taking shots at anybody out here. I have been there. And I found that a reasonable and practical and daily application of these steps, I haven't felt that way in memory. I had suicidal depressions for years. Step 2 in the 12 and 12, it talks specifically about depression. I haven't had a major depression in years, and it's through these steps. Now, I know that annoys a lot of people anymore. Didn't used to. It used to be common knowledge. But it annoys people. But pray for me if that annoys you. Because it's been the answer for me. And I buried too many of my good friends who some expert told them differently. You know where those experts are never at? The funerals. You never see them. They don't even do a follow-up to see how they're doing. We that have been here see the results of their experimentation, and it usually isn't very good. There again, that's why, to me, these steps are so important. And believe me, I am not saying that there aren't some instances where things aren't necessary. I am not saying that at all. What I am saying is 90% of the people who come out of treatment anymore are on something. And that isn't good. I don't know about you, but I told you last night I'm addicted to anything. When I put chemicals in my body, you notice they no longer say chemical dependency anymore. That's because everybody's putting them on chemicals. Isn't that odd? And there is a place and there is a purpose, and I understand that's an outside issue. And Bill one time wrote a wonderful pamphlet on goofballs in AA. And it's disappeared, oddly enough. I can't find it. But I was talking to an archivist in Oklahoma that knows everything about everything, and he's going to get me one. My point being is, it says to go to outside sources, but all I'm saying is make sure you've worked this first, not done a surface run. Make sure you've actually tried to apply this, and if you don't have anybody around you that knows how to apply it, seek them out, because there are answers. And the answers are exquisite. The answers that I found in seeking and actually practicing these steps was everything I'd ever hoped for. First three steps are the foundation. The question is, how have you applied it? The question is, have you applied it at all? Or the question is, what can I do better? My prayer today, I used to have long prayers. For a number of years, I like two-word prayers. And it was clarity and courage. That was all. God, give me clarity of what I need to do and grant me the courage to do it. Today it's reachable and teachable. That's all. I just want to stay reachable and teachable. I want to soak this up. I want to soak life up. I want to soak all that's good up, because I am one of those that believe my power greater than myself can be my own negative thinking. You know, The Secret came out last year, and everybody said, it's talked about it for here. Step 2 in the 12 and 12, Bill's talk says, all we've basically done is replace negative thinking with positive thinking. What a flash. I really believe that I can create my own destiny. I really believe that the result of these steps, I can have those promises. But I got to believe them, and I got to act like it. My favorite saying is, your actions speak so loud I can't hear a word you say. I hang out with the folks I can walk with in the daylight. Not judging the other folks, it's just, they don't have anything I want. I've been there. And they're spreading the disease rather than the message, in my opinion. Or the mess rather than the message. And it's too critical. It's too critical for each and every person here. There's a thing that used to be why we are chosen. I think everybody's chosen. There's just some of us that choose to accept being chosen and some of us that don't. But I think we're all chosen. And I really believe that the 12 steps give us something that I never even knew was in there. The first three steps are the basic door opening to becoming the person God made me to be. And that took a lot of work, because I'm a lot better than I ever thought I'd be. It all swerves on these first three steps. Do we have the Ask It basket? How are we doing on time? Ooh. I got noisy, didn't I? Can I hand it? The questions are in here? Yeah, see, you were supposed to put them back in the basket. No, wait, I think I can pick them up. Thank you. I'm going to grab these three, and let's pass it around if you got a question. Oh, thank you. If you just pass it around real quick, if you got a question, or Bobby, would you just walk around? Or would you? Either one. There you go. Thank you. That's funny. I want to step on my phone. Quit controlling. I've been looking for a reason to get a new phone. I figure if I step on that accidentally, I can get one. Not that I manipulate certain circumstances. Thank you, sweetie. Appreciate it. Oh, okay. I ran a little over, so we're going to go through these kind of quickly, but those questions will remain in there even afterwards. Thank you very much, Carmen. I appreciate that. Do you think our friends mandating... Do you think that our friends mandating people to AA has an effect on the has affected the flat line? Do they surrender? Oh, Bill's pamphlet on goofballs, yeah. Yeah, I definitely do. And that's no reflection on them. They were certainly trying to help. But one of the things I've witnessed, I mean, I got sober when we used to carry tongue depressors with adhesive tape wrapped around them because somebody during the meeting's going to go into DTs, you know. It's just a matter of fact. And it got so common that we'd keep going on. And every once in a while, we'd have a laugh when the leader was so self-obsessed, they'd call on the person that was having the DTs, you know. Said, he's busy right now. Thank you very much. But they started mass-producing sobriety. And they started mass-producing AA. You know, I can't tell you of the number of people I've talked to who've been in and out of AA, and I say, have you ever been to AA? And this is what, oh, I've been to those classes. Tells me they've never been to AA. The sad part is they believe they have, and they believe AA don't work for them. So all the well-meaning intention is kind of blown up in our face. One of the things and one of the reasons it keeps me motivated to keep coming out and talking about it is treatment centers are closing down right and left. And there's one thing that really concerns me. People don't know what a 12-step call is anymore. You know, people don't know what it is to have them puke on your shoes. People don't know what it is to take them into your house. Give them a few bucks. Make sure they got some food. Make sure they have a shirt and tie for that first time they go to a big meeting, you know. I hear another thing in AA that just about, well, we're not a bank or we're not an employment agency. You can tell they've never read Working with Others because it says that's exactly what we are if that's what's required. So, yeah, the outside sources our friends have had an effect on the flatlining of AA. But that's just going to make us stronger, that's all. We just need to get into the book, we need to get into our individual programs, and we need to really understand what they meant, not how I interpret it. Or what did they mean about that word? You know? I have a lot of people with step three say to me, what does it mean to turn your will in your life over to the care of God as you understand Him? I said, it means turning your will in your life over to the care of God. Bill wasn't that deep, trust me, you know. Why don't AA members make 12-step calls on drunks because their wife asked them to? That's a good question. Well, one of the reasons is the general rule of thumb is that the person has to ask for help themselves. You know, you hear a lot of, and I know some people have gotten sober through intervention. They even have a program now, which I refuse to watch. I tried to watch it twice, and I was suicidal. I'm quicker, you know. But we won't go there. Won't go there. Turn that channel. Excuse me. There we go. But I believe the person has to ask for help. There's a guy in my home group who 3 years ago his mom and dad came to me. I was a pastor of the church that they were at, and they come to me, and his dad's a big old truck driver, Don, big old guy. And he's sitting in my office sobbing, shoulders just bouncing. He said, Ed, my son's drinking himself to death. He goes to work, he comes home because he knows that's the only place he's going to get money to drink, and he takes a fifth of vodka into the basement, and he drinks around the clock, and we're raising his two kids. We went on vacation last week, and thank you. And the neighbors called that he wandered out of the basement to get the mail and passed out in the bushes, and we had to come home and pull him out of the bushes. And they said, we're afraid we're going to lose our son. And I said, well, do you think he'll come talk to me? And they said, we don't know. We'll ask. And the next day, Kevin's there. And I said, Don, Mom, tell Kevin what you're doing and what you're going through. And they got all done, and Kevin said, well, I don't see where there's a problem. And I simply said to him, Kevin, you're wrong. This is a real problem. This guy had been to treatment 3 times. That did it for him. He said, you know what? Ed's right. Has nothing to do with Ed. So there are times when you can try to help. I'm not a big fan of intervention, but for the most part, people need to ask for help because especially now it's a conveyor belt in and out, in and out, in and out. I had a dear friend of mine, Al Bogus, who was a bum. He lived under the bridge. I loved him. He was a good guy. He was a chronic alcoholic. He ended up going back to drinking. I asked him one time, I said, why do you go back to drinking? He said, Ed, I like it here. I don't fit in out there. Nobody knows what it is to have a good place under the bridge. But one thing he told me when he got sober is, you know, these detoxes are horrible. And I said, why is that, Al? He said, you know, we used to drink and it'd take us 30, 60 days to get back on our feet again after a good binge. Now they got us out there in 4 or 5 days. It's killing us. Isn't that something? But all the experts said, oh, this is the right way. I believe I am not responsible for my thoughts, but I am responsible for how long I entertain them and the actions I take on them. I kind of agree with that. Here's how I work that. Chuck C. was a dear friend of mine. He was a guy who, by his presence sitting with him, I knew there was a God. Well, he said a lot of great things, too, that I remember, but being with him in his presence, I knew there was a God. One time I went to him and I said, how do you pray? And he said, Ed, your every thought's a prayer. And I went, uh-oh. Did a little editing what I'd been thinking that day. It was not good news. And I was a little embarrassed and sad, to be honest with you. I thought, geez. And then the thought crossed my mind, and I'll share it with you. If you have a thought that comes to mind that you don't think God would approve of, replace it with something that he would, or she would, or whatever your God is. That's all. And you know what that's called? Praying unceasingly. I used to read that in the Bible, and I thought, man, how can people do that? That'd make you crazy. No, it makes you sane. Because if I have a thought that I don't care for and is not good, I replace it with a good thought and something I'd like to think. That's my choice. I agree with you. You're not responsible for your thoughts to a degree because I can put myself in situations. Oh, it's great. I'll tell you this story, and then we'll break. How are we doing on time? Okay. I'm up in Duluth, Minnesota, and I ended up with the same host a dear friend of mine has, Butch, good buddy of mine. And I get into the front of the truck, and the guy said, the host said, hey, you want to go to a strip club? I said, no, I'll probably pass on that. And he said, no, no. He said, no alcohol. Don't worry about it, man. It's really cool. And I said, no, I think I'd just as soon pass. He said, no, no, I'll front you 20, man. It's a buck dance. You know, I used to laugh. It's great, man. You want to go? I said, no, no, thanks. And Butch is cracking up in the back seat. And all of a sudden, as you know what he asked next, what do you do for a living? I said, I'm a pastor. He said, oh, shit. Excuse my language, kids, but... Why I said that is I'm responsible for my thoughts if I put myself in a place where those thoughts are going to occur. It's an outside issue, but it's killing more people in AA, I know, than people can imagine. That's pornography. Now, I'm in judgment of nothing, but if you can't say no, it's a problem. And these steps work for it. That's what we're talking about. And if I put myself in that arena, why am I surprised those thoughts come? Lust, same thing. Any of those areas. Dishonesty, stealing, time card at work. If I put myself in those areas, probably going to happen. That's why I don't hang out in bars anymore. Same thing. So that helps with the thoughts too. Okay? We'll take, what, a 15-minute break, is it? Joyce, 15-minute break. Thank you.